Hey everybody, welcome to the Plain Glass Podcast, where we discuss worship leadership, church music, and a myriad of other stuff. My name is Chris.
And my name is Jay. On today's episode, we are going to discuss developing a philosophy of worship. But before we do that, we are going to discuss our latest Sunday and see how things went. Ready, Chris?
Let's do it. Jay, your church recently switched from one service to two.
Yes.
Have we discussed that yet?
I think I mentioned it on the last episode.
Okay.
But it's okay to discuss it.
Yeah.
Because we're still in this transition phase.
We are. How's it going?
Yeah, it's going well. I'm continuing to be surprised, pleasantly surprised by how things are going smoothly. No major issues. But, you know, as a staff, we talk about it each week, just work out some of the finer things.
Yeah.
As far as transitioning something that we haven't had to do, which is ending one service and kind of resetting and getting ready for the next service and what that looks like for what teams and, you know, what they need to do to make that possible. So
sure.
Working out some of those kinks, but I'm continuing to be really excited about having two services and just surprised by the way it's going. So that's been really, really good. This past Sunday we let me think here. I'm trying to think of just a high and a low. I have a couple highs, I'll say. But the low was I experienced for the first time, I don't know if this is a low, but a pretty stark difference between the two services experientially that I hadn't experienced the first Sunday.
Hmm.
So like congregational engagement was pretty different from one service to the other.
Are the sizes similar?
They were similar this week.
Interesting.
It might have been the people, you know, and their personalities who are in one service over the other. But I started wondering, because, you know, I'm self-absorbed, what did I do wrong?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we talked about it as a staff, and, you know, I kind of left that service feeling, what could I have done better? What was I doing that it didn't really seem like there was a whole lot of engagement? I know there was, but it just felt different, and just kind of like sitting in that negative space for a moment. And we're talking about it as a staff and discussing these things, and I come to find out that after that service, we actually had somebody come to the Lord.
Oh.
The one that I thought that, like, where is everybody at today? You know, like, mentally and, you know, engaged and stuff. Somebody came to the Lord.
That's amazing.
Like,
so the one that you're feeling all bummed about.
Right.
There's this incredible thing that happens in somebody's life.
Incredible thing happened. In somebody's life in a service that, you know, maybe wasn't as loud,
yeah,
for instance, you know, or something like that.
Yeah, or you didn't feel this kind of the feedback between the leader and the congregation that you like to feel, is like that we're all in this together and we're participating.
Right.
It's almost like the floor raises and everybody's kind of moving in the same direction together.
Yeah.
If it feels like it's falling flat for whatever reason, that really affects me.
Yeah.
Negatively.
Yeah.
And it colors my perception of everything.
Right.
Thereafter.
Yeah. And it's not, you know, I have to take like that kind of stuff like with a grain of salt, because from week to week, you don't know what's going on in people's lives.
Sure.
You don't know what they're walking into or what they're leaving to walk into the church, what they're leaving to walk into. I don't know mm-hmm. what I'm saying. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You don't know what their weekend was like. And so this service, even though it wasn't as loud as normal or anything like that, like, people were still there and they were engaged.
Mm-hmm.
And my perception can be very much flawed, clearly.
Yeah.
If somebody, you know, confessed Jesus as their Lord after that service. So
something was going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it reminds me that just because a church doesn't maybe respond the way that I'm expecting, doesn't mean the Lord's not at work.
For sure.
You know? So that was really encouraging. So something that felt like a low at first actually turned around and became like, oh man, I'm really encouraged by this.
Mm-hmm.
This is really neat.
one of the things we have to be careful about too in gauging worship based on our own experience is that we know, like, our experience as worshipers is not the point.
Right.
It's and we're not even the one enabling or enacting the worship. God has moved toward us in his love, mm-hmm. and we're responding, and he invites us to do it.
Yes.
So to just be honest about sometimes I don't feel that, that's actually, I think, a really healthy and human response to something that's just, this is honestly where I am. Fortunately, God does not require me to be up and ready all the time.
Yeah.
And he doesn't require my experience of him and his mercy and grace to always be in line with its grandeur.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of freedom to just say, sometimes we don't feel it. And it's maybe even for the point of you saying, this amazing thing happened and I didn't have eyes for it because my experience was different.
Yeah.
That just shows me how important it is to remember it's not all about our experience in worship. And that will press up against a lot of the philosophy of our culture as it approaches worship. Yeah. And I think that's something that we need to be challenging as leaders.
Yeah, that's good. Thank you for that encouraging word, because I definitely was filtering both those services through my own experience and my own perception.
Yeah.
Rather than trying to think outside of that and see what God's doing outside of that.
And it's one of the things we want to be doing in this podcast is, and hoping that that's an encouragement to people who would listen, who are in similar places. Maybe you share this experience. You felt this way before. And maybe you haven't known what to do with that feeling. Let this be an encouragement to you that you bring that honestly to God. And he is always at work, and he's making you more like his son.
Yeah, good. The other thing, too, that was really exciting was my children are now in one of the services, the older children, because we want to move them into the church service, you know, and get them to be a part of what's going on with the bigger body of
believers. Do they seem ready for that? Like, they want that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's great.
So we're singing this Getty song, He Will Hold Me Fast, as a church, and I can hear my two oldest children above everybody else singing it.
That's so cool.
I know. And they're standing on the chairs so that they can actually see, because, you know, they're 7 years old.
Yeah.
And if they stood on the floor, they couldn't see the screens or anything. And just seeing them sing their hearts out,
mm-hmm.
and joining the church in singing those words, it was really encouraging for me. It was really encouraging. So, yeah, that was a really big high as a dad,
yeah.
and as a worship leader.
That's a full week. And that's really cool that would be a fruit of having a second service, mm-hmm. too, that it would create that kind of space for your family,
mm-hmm.
you know, and hopefully there are other people that have that experience, but that's really special.
Yeah.
For you.
Yeah. So how was your Sunday?
Yeah, we're right on the cusp of doing a big change, you know, similar to what you guys have done. So when we got to this last service, it was like the last single service. And I'm just looking around and realizing, you know, this is the last time for a while that we're going to have this group together at one time. And so I don't know if you call it sobriety, but there was just this kind of sobering sense of a solemnity almost of recognizing that it was kind of a special time. And we had communion. And so the service had a real rich sense to it.
Cool.
Just from beginning to end, and especially in communion. So, yeah, that was my experience. Was I can't necessarily pinpoint anything specific except that the way that we're doing communion right now requires extra music, and some of that is just me doing stuff on my own. So I'll either do something instrumental, and sometimes I'll sing at the same time.
Yeah.
And this Sunday specifically, based on what we're looking at in the sermons for a series on kind of vision and mission of our church, I selected a couple things that I thought would be really appropriate, and I had them in my back pocket just kind of ready.
Mm-hmm.
And it ended up being that it was exactly what was needed. So it was really cool for me to, I could sense it building in the sermon, and I realized I think that it's right to do these songs.
Yeah.
And then I got a lot of feedback from people afterward, just really encouraged by it. So that was a really neat, you know, sometimes you prepare extra or something. This might work, but then you have to, in the moment, just be prepared.
Right.
That it may or may not.
Right.
In the same way that you might have to be prepared to run back and pull out a completely new song because you realize what you had planned is not going to work.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever that experience. So yes. This was one of those where instead of a panic, it was like, wow, all that prep, it was actually worth it because we can employ all these things. Mm-hmm. And the effect was to edify the church. And we'll discuss that some later. Just, we think about philosophy of worship, but that's one of the big ones for me, that we're being built up as a body, all of us. It's one of my goals. And so to get that feedback from people that they're really blessed by it, it's a huge encouragement.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I almost thought you said to being built up as a potty.
As a potty?
Because I have little children.
Yeah.
But you said body.
Mm-mm. I said potty.
Oh, okay.
No, I said body.
It's like, that's a weird ecclesiology.
It's a little strange, yeah. Right. But it's, if you think of, no, we're not doing that.
Yeah, so don't take it there.
Yeah. Good Sunday. The only downside, if I had to pick something, would just be I don't get to do that anymore. Mm. One service with the whole church.
Yeah.
So saying goodbye to that did have a sense of...
It's bittersweet.
Yeah. And it wasn't really a letdown, but it was a sense of that we are losing something by stepping out kind of on mission to do this other thing when we're going to gain something entirely different.
Yeah. It's bittersweet.
Yeah.
I get that. Obviously, because I just went through it.
Yes.
Cool. I think, is that?
Yeah, wrap it up.
Yeah, let's move on to our main segment.
Anybody that said, I don't have a philosophy of worship, I'd say, that's ridiculous, that's nonsense. Of course you do. You just haven't articulated it yet. But we all have a framework and a system of how we approach everything.
Yep.
It's how we're designed. So it's okay to say, I don't really know, but I can pinpoint little things about it that I think are important to me or things that I don't like. And then maybe it begins as a visceral reaction to something. And then it becomes a well-formed opinion about, well, this is why I don't think that that's right. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's one of the roles of a leader, is to be refining that over time.
With any philosophy of worship, I think it's really good to begin with our theology. What do we believe about God?
Mm-hmm.
What do we believe about ourselves in light of who God is and what he's done through Jesus, right? All of those things. Look to the Bible and see what the Bible says about worship.
Mm-hmm.
Let that inform our philosophy, which then would in turn lead us through our methodology of how we lead worship.
Yeah, you want to begin definitely with what we believe to be true about God. And I think in some cases you're starting from scratch, but most of the time you're not. So if you're stepping into a church that, for example, is a part of a denomination,
yeah,
they're going to have their own set of principles and presuppositions. Some will be unspoken, but a lot could be found in some kind of a governing document or maybe the church has a constitution. Even if it's non-denominational, it probably has tenets about your faith.
Yeah.
And so, that would be a good place to start, mm-hmm. I think, depending on the context of a worship leader that might be thinking through this for the first time. You're not starting from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, the foundation should always be what God has revealed about himself. Mm-hmm. And the place that I go to for that is his word.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's good to look at, I think, look at theology and philosophy in these terms of theology helps us understand the why of worship, and I think philosophy helps to dictate the how of worship.
Yep.
You know, if there are any men or women who are listening who want to think through how to develop or at least get a baseline of how to develop a philosophy of worship, what are some passages in the scriptures that maybe are foundational mm-hmm. to help develop that? Do you want to share your thoughts on that?
Sure. Yeah. And we mentioned this a moment ago, Jay and I. The reality is there is so much.
Yeah.
There's the Bible is full of worship.
Yeah.
Just is in Old and New Testament. And so there are some things that are very prescriptive about how that should look. And then there are a lot of things that are very descriptive about what it has looked like in the past.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite go-to passages, and this is a place that I'll actually start if I'm developing leaders or I'm teaching my team about worship, a place that I'll go really early on is actually not in the New Testament. It's in the Old Testament.
Yeah.
I go to Isaiah 6.
Yeah.
So, and Isaiah 6, if you want to pause for a minute and read it, go ahead and do that. It describes a scene in the throne room of God in heaven. So Isaiah is transported, and we have a time in Israel's life in the year that King Uzziah died.
Yep.
And a vision of heaven, and he goes on to describe what's happening right now, what's happening in the presence of God day and night, this worship that's happening all the time. And then we have suddenly this human who's interjected into that. And when he steps into that story, when he steps into that moment mm-hmm. in the throne room of God,
yeah.
he's immediately faced with a choice, this greatness and glory and holiness of God. He immediately falls on his face yeah. and confesses
yeah.
his sin. He repents, not only on behalf of himself, but of his people.
Yeah.
So it's unclean lips. I'm a man of unclean lips. From a generation of unclean lips. The second he does that, God, by one of his ministers, an angel actually condescends, comes to him.
Yeah.
And you have atonement right there. Literally, it's almost in the same breath.
Yeah.
This happens. And the worship continues.
Yeah.
And then you get this little window into, there's actually a conversation within the Godhead. Whom shall I send and who will go for us?
Yeah.
And suddenly, instead of being on his face unwilling to speak, Isaiah speaks up and says, here am I, send me. And that's a really famous passage. That one is actually quoted a lot.
Yeah.
But the context of it is being, this is what heavenly worship looks like. And then we actually have a picture of what it looks like when a human being steps inside of that.
Mm.
And so for me, and the fact that you see these different aspects of what worship in the presence of God should look like. They're revealed from adoration to confession to atonement for sin or,
yeah.
you know, the assurance of pardon
yeah.
to that there's this movement toward then mission, commission
yep. yep,
that we're sent. And it's just a treasure of a passage for a worship leader to really dwell on that and to think about how when I'm calling other people to join me, like, come join me in this, what can I glean from a passage like that? Mm-hmm. So that's one, and that's kind of a quick take on it. What about you? What's something that you would say is really foundational?
When I look at the Bible, I don't think you can overlook the largest book in the Bible when you're mm-hmm. thinking about worship, which would be the book of Psalms.
Yeah.
If you're wanting to see and think thoroughly about worship, you should read the Psalms and study the Psalms. And I typically, when I do a call to worship, most of the time it comes from a psalm, because a lot of calls to worship happen in the Psalms.
And they're very effective for that, because usually they're pretty concise too. There's like a
right,
yeah. just a perfect passage that embodies what you want to say, but it's not too long.
Yeah, exactly. But it also includes, it runs the gamut of emotion. It's mm-hmm. it's celebratory, but there's also lament. There is feelings of abandonment and crying out to the Lord. There's confessions of sin.
Yeah.
There's praise and thanksgiving. There's so much in the Psalms to learn about worship. To develop a philosophy of worship, I would tell anybody, go to the Psalms. I know that for a lot of listeners, they're probably like, yeah, duh.
Mm-hmm.
But
really, go there.
Really, go there. Yeah, that's a big one. And then one that really informs my philosophy of worship, and it's a passage, you know, you mentioned Isaiah 6 that you go to when you teach your worship team or new recruits and that kind of thing, and which is a great passage to do that, to use for that. A passage that I use when I talk to my worship team is Colossians 3. Paul's writing to the church there and saying that they're to teach and admonish one another with psalms and hymns and spiritual songs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the one another phrase that really informs the way that I like to lead worship. It really informs my priority in congregational singing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And some translations, legitimate translations, even say teach and admonish one another through psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, which is really interesting. And I really like that thought of when we gather together on Sundays and we're singing these songs, we're actually teaching and admonishing one another. We're reminding each other of the gospel, of what God's done for us. And so it's not just me as a worship leader who's now singing to, you know, a group of people in front of me. It's actually me leading the song, but we're singing to each other. And that's been really instructive in the way that I've thought about worship and developing my own philosophy of worship.
Yeah. I love that. That one another, that's the linchpin. A lot of times we go to that psalms, hymns, spiritual songs.
Yeah.
What does that mean? What constitutes a hymn?
Right.
You know, let's fight about what this doesn't
style,
mean.
Style, diversity of song.
Yeah. And I think that for you to press your people into thinking about, to viewing that as one another.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that goes back to, if it's not building up the body, if it's not edifying the potty, then what are we doing?
Right. It sounded like you said potty again.
I said potty that time. That was for you.
That's awesome. Yeah,
you're welcome.
Oh, man.
I made eye contact and everything.
Yeah. I saw the smirk. So, and the pause.
But you're clearly like, but did it?
But you had to affirm it.
It did it. Yeah.
So those three passages I think are really good ones for any person who's trying to develop their own philosophy of worship to look to those three. There, like you just mentioned a few minutes ago, there's so much in the Bible that talks about worship. And even you as a listener might be thinking, hey, you left this one out or that one out. Share those with us. Share the ones that mean a lot to you. These are ones that mean a lot to us and have informed our philosophy of worship. So we're just sharing from our own experience and developing our own. But what has been really important to you as a worship leader, and why? I would love to hear those, and I'd actually love to share those on a future episode.
That would be great.
Yeah. Before we wrap up this segment, I think it would be good to share briefly, Chris, if you could describe your philosophy of worship for your church.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can be general or you can be as specific as you want. How would you describe your philosophy of worship?
It's such a good question, and I feel almost embarrassed that I can't answer it quickly.
But right, because I emphasize brief. And
right.
You're like, I don't think I can do that.
Yeah, I don't know if I can. But I can give you some distinctives. Things that are really important that I would sacrifice most other things for these.
Mm.
The glory of God should be evident in everything that we say and the way that we do it.
Mm.
So I want us to be orienting ourselves toward Him and His greatness. And so that can have lots of implications about what we do and things that we choose not to do.
Yeah.
It's about the glory of God. It is about exalting Christ. So Jesus Christ, the Son of God, being exalted, the name above every name at which every knee will bow. Our worship should model what the scriptures teach about Jesus and His name. And there's lots of great music for that. So that's kind of, that's one that's pretty easy to land, because there's a lot of stuff out there that exalts the name of Christ. Lift high the name of Jesus. And so that we cannot go without that. I've mentioned this already today, but edification, the building up of the body of Christ. So we are not a group of consumers. We're not even a group of individuals in this room. We are the gathered body of Christ, His bride. We're here together. And so our worship, our corporate worship, the worship that we do together in our space at a specific time, should build us up in faith.
Yeah.
And so those three, I could probably just leave it at that. There's more, but those are so important. Yeah. And notice how little they have to do with music.
Right.
So that's something else to just think about. It's easy to equate worship with music. A lot of people are doing that right now. Like a worship leader, that just is definitely a musician.
Right.
Chances are the worship leader is a musician, but worship is so much more than music.
I would agree with you about those three.
What can you add? What else do you have?
Yeah, if I could add anything.
Maybe even more specific. Maybe you've got some more specific things that would be helpful for people.
Yeah, so like exalting God and exalting Christ above all. Something I use with my team when I'm recruiting, helping people understand our philosophy is comparing the differences between stained glass and plain glass. That stained glass, the purpose of it, the function of it, is to be looked at, to be observed, and to be appreciated for its beauty. But the purpose of plain glass is to be able to see what's on the other side. That doesn't mean that we aren't excellent in all that we do, because that's also a distraction. And you start looking at the band and you see the smudges on the glass, right? Mm-hmm. We want to be excellent in all that we do. And we want to be creative. We do want to be creative, but creativity does not take a higher seat than the church worshiping the Lord. Once creativity comes to a point where people are now looking at us, that's missing the point of what we're doing on Sunday. But listener, you might disagree with us.
Absolutely.
I hope so. Yeah. Like, I hope there are people listening that would not just agree with everything we have to say. However, my philosophy of worship has informed the way I lead our team to use that kind of metaphor, that we want to be the plain glass.
Yeah. Thanks for explaining that, because I think we've gone long enough without actually stating what it means.
Yeah.
And hopefully now you're getting a sense of why we named this podcast The Plain Glass. It had a purpose, and you're going to hear it in other aspects of how we discuss worship.
So exalting God, exalting Christ, making little of ourselves as worship leaders, just being servants of the church. That is all informed by this foundational idea of exalting God above all. I think the church singing is one big thing that Colossians 3 passage means a lot for me.
One another. It's
the communal aspect of the corporate aspect of worship on Sundays. So it informs the types of songs that I choose to sing and the way we choose to use music in the service when musical worship is incorporated. I guess one final question is how has your philosophy of worship changed over time? And I can share some of my thoughts about that.
Definitely. Go ahead.
Yeah. So my philosophy of worship, I don't think I had one early on, like a clear one. I think when I started leading worship in my late teen years and early 20s, it was so much more about music than worship. Mm-hmm. It was much more about singing well and playing well and not messing up. So that definitely changed over time. Like, I put that away, and I still struggle with the me part of, you know, worship leading.
Of course you do.
Somehow about me or something, but as anybody would. But it's not a large part of how I interact with worship leading anymore. What's changed quite a bit is the emphasis on congregational singing.
Mm-hmm.
My eyes have been opened over the last few years about truly the importance of the church singing together on Sundays and the impact that has for myself and for the people there.
Yeah.
And to do church in such a way, do the music in such a way that really facilitates that happening. So what about you?
My beginning in ministry was almost devoid of any sense of articulating a philosophy. It was much more experiential. It was just being in it, enjoying it. I've always enjoyed leading worship, just from the very beginning, something happens when I'm leading that's different than anything else. And I've been drawn to that, I think, just personally, because it's almost like you feed off of this experience. And I think there's some dangers to just staying in that place, but that's definitely what drew me in.
Yeah.
When people started to ask me questions like, how do you think about it? Or how do you plan? How do you pick those songs? You know, how do you do that? I don't understand how you could just start from nothing and come up with a worship service. And like, this really helped me, but what were you thinking about when you did that? I realized I didn't really have many answers for that, but I wanted to be able to, for myself and for the people that I was leading, particularly my volunteers, to be able to say, this is what we're up to. This is why. So mine has changed a great deal because it began as nothing.
Yeah.
And it's become something. And, you know, maybe another time, or in a, maybe we could post or publish our, you know, kind of a written form of what we've got.
Sure.
And what we share with people, and maybe that'd be helpful. And I'd be happy to share that with anybody who asked. But it really is, it's been a process for me. And I think anybody who says that they've got it completely figured out, like, I have arrived at this thing and I can quantify what worship is, and my philosophy is perfectly in line with Scripture and with the Spirit and how He's leading.
Yeah.
That's just a crazy thought to me. I don't think it's possible. So yeah. I don't want to ever figure it out. I never want to finish my philosophy of worship. I want to constantly be reforming that the way I want to be reformed to Scripture constantly.
I think that about wraps up this segment.
Sounds good. Let's discuss a song.
Cool. So each week we like to take a few minutes and take a look at one of the songs off of CCLI's top 100 list. These songs on this list are a reflection of the most popular songs that are being sung in churches across America. So you probably will find yourself, you probably know these songs. You've probably sung these songs. We've looked at a few already, but this week's is 10,000 Reasons by Matt Redman.
And
do you have the...
Jonas Miren.
Two authors.
Yep.
So let's just talk about it. This is a song that I've sung quite a bit. It was very popular, I would say, 3 or 4 years ago. And still being sung, obviously. It's in the top 100. But
yeah, it's up there.
For myself, I was singing it a lot about 3 or 4 years ago, I would say. So let's just open this up, Chris. What do you think about this song?
I think it's a great song for the church. Mm-hmm. So it's not every day that one of the songs that's really popular, maybe it's been played on the radio a lot or whatever, it's really popular in churches. It's not every day that that song is also really well suited for congregational singing. Mm-hmm. This is probably a pattern. I think it's a problem.
Yeah.
And that's something that we've addressed at other times, and we're going to continue to discuss this idea. What does it mean for something to be singable? I think that this song is very singable.
Yeah.
It's interesting musically without being weird. Mm-hmm. I appreciate little things about it, like the fact that it doesn't have a bridge, because it doesn't need a bridge.
Right, it doesn't need one.
One of the things that Matt Redman seems to be able to do is, in a style that's contemporary, or some other word that you want to use to define it, he follows patterns that, to me, almost have a hymn-like quality to them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And because they tell stories.
Yes.
And that's what, you know, some of these old hymns that maybe you don't know what to do with them, but the text is great, and we have to figure something out. We don't want to lose some of these texts.
Yes.
Matt Redman has always had a way of speaking to the human experience, like the experience of the worshiper.
Yeah.
Without necessarily making it all about the worshiper, because worship is supposed to be... it is about us. We're there. Worship is not about us, but it wouldn't be happening if we weren't gathered. It would be happening in that way if we weren't gathered singing. So you can't remove us either.
Right.
And so it's almost a tension.
But the object of our worship is not ourselves, obviously.
Of course. And this song helps me worship. So I got a little tired of it because we probably did it too much and I heard it too much.
Same here.
But it still holds up. And I'm curious, because I've talked about it some, what your thoughts are on it. I've got some more things I could share, but how does it sit with you, like, when you lead it in your church?
That's a great question. We actually haven't done this in a very long time, purposefully. October, I can tell you exactly, not the date, but I can tell you it was October of 2017 was the last time we sang the song.
Why do you remember that?
Because I've intentionally not done it.
So you put it, it's a moratorium.
I put it on the shelf.
Yeah.
Because we wore it out.
Hmm.
And I'm really sad that we wore it out. And you, I could just tell when I'm singing, like the last time I led this song, the church was just, it almost felt like their eyes were glazed over.
Yeah.
You know, which is really sad. And actually is a good learning moment as a worship leader to not do songs too often. But also you have to, it's not always your fault as a worship leader either. The radio also plays a role in that too.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
But
there's immunity to that though. Just don't listen to the radio.
It's true. So, we've actually not done it in a long time, but I haven't thrown it out. And that's why I know the last time I did it, because I'm kind of waiting.
Waiting to bring it back.
I'm waiting to bring it back. I'm waiting. I'm just giving it some time. And then we're going to do it again because it is such a lovely song.
Yeah.
I mean, it is scripture.
Yeah.
Specifically the choruses or chorus is, what did we, Psalm 103.
Yep.
The beginning of Psalm 103.
First few verses of it.
Yeah. And I agree with you. I love the progression of the verses going from the sun comes up to, and on that day when my strength is failing, like this kind of beginning and ending.
Yeah.
Kind of idea. I love it. It's brilliant writing.
Me too, yeah.
And I love that he addresses death.
Yes.
Not a lot of songs in worship address death. It's good to remind ourselves of the fleeting nature of life and the eternal nature of heaven. Because he talks about 10,000 years and then forevermore.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. I love the build. I can hear it in my head.
Yep.
The build.
There are little nuances in the songwriting and the arrangement that's the most popular arrangement, but there's a high level of craftsmanship in this music,
mm-hmm,
that's easy to miss. And I think honestly, that's fine because it really doesn't need to be the object.
Right.
This does point me to God. Mm-hmm. You are rich in love and you're slow to anger. Your name is great and your heart is kind. So I'm going to say things that are true about God to him.
Yep.
And then that spurs me on to more worship. The fact that we can say these things, especially when we use the Psalms worship, it's like they're resources for us to be able to pour out to God when we don't have
the words to say.
The words or the resources, or even if I don't feel it or believe it at the time. I've encountered some people that have struggled with some liturgical aspects of our services, like confessions of sin. If it's a long form prayer and we're basically putting words in people's mouths,
right?
If they were to say, I don't feel like that's true of me now in this moment, and so I don't know how to say that in good conscience, and I don't know that that's a faithful act of worship for me at that time. And that's an interesting thing to think through, but there's no way around the scriptures,
right?
We can say them out loud regardless of whether or not our experience matches, and we should, and regardless of our belief in any given moment as to whether or not his heart is kind.
Right.
He's revealed himself clearly in the scriptures, and so we ought to bring those to him even when we don't feel them. And so this song has in the past helped me do that, and I know it must help other people.
Yes.
To come to God openly and honestly and to just give him his words back.
Yeah.
As a simple but faithful act of worship.
You know, I've actually said this from the stage before, in a worship service. Sometimes the songs you sing, you don't feel like this applies to you.
Mm-hmm.
Especially these songs of praise and adoration.
Yeah.
These very positive songs, when you're struggling to sing such positive songs. And I've reminded them from the church from the stage, sometimes the songs you sing, when you're singing these songs, it's not that you're saying to God, this is how I feel right now. But it can be a way of you saying to God, I want to feel this way, or I want this to be true for me. Mm-hmm. And I know that this is true about you, or these things are true about you, and I want to be this way. Will you help me?
Yeah.
And so you can still sing those songs or read the, you know, the words on the screen, the spoken word, still in good conscience, because you're saying, you're affirming, I believe this to be true, even if I don't feel it right now.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that's, the song helps, is very clear in helping people do that.
So I'm glad it's popular.
Yeah.
I'm glad Matt Redman continues to write music. And I mean, I always get excited when he comes out with new things.
Yeah.
So there are actually quite a few of his that I've really personally been drawn to. Not all of them have worked congregationally.
That's true.
But this one really works.
Not everybody can. There's no one person who can every song that they write.
Yeah, it's a home run.
It's a home run. Yeah.
Shall we end that we can keep talking about songs?
No, I think, done? No, okay. I think we're good. I don't think this is one we have to hang out on very long.
It passes the test.
Yeah.
Well, that's this week's episode. We hope you were encouraged and challenged by our discussion.
If you want to reach out to us with any questions or comments about our discussion, comment below, or you can send us an email at plainglasspod@gmail.com. We do really appreciate the time that you've taken to go on this journey with us.